listening to the Mouthful of Graffiti podcast. The Mog, not to be mistaken for John Candy's half-man, half-dog character from 1987 Spaceballs, is a mouthpiece for Mid-Atlantic creatives. I'm your host, Brad Cox, the Mog Father, a name affectionately coined and given to me by conversations with Rich Bennett, and I'm here to let you into the Mog House. Let's see who and what we're chewing on today on the Mog. The Mog, podcasting from Underground Studios, aims to be an all-inclusive, all-things creative networking megaphone, and with the amount of talent we have in our own backyard, I don't know that we'll ever have a shortage of good content and rich stories to tell. Everyone has a story that's uniquely their own, and it's the Mog's mission to unearth it. The Mouthful of Graffiti podcast started as a seed and couldn't have grown without the support of those who sponsored us along the way. We'd like to thank Musicland, Reb Records, Capricos Books, The Gone But Never Forgotten Black Eyed Susies, Vagabond Sandwich Company, Double Groove Brewing, and the Baltimore Decal Gal. Don't forget to use discount code MOGPOD for a 10% discount at Capricos Books. Everyone knows you can't stop by Main Street Bel Air without grabbing some fresh new wax at Reb Records, followed by a delicious lunch at Vagabond Sandwich Company. While you're in town, swing by Musicland for the latest in gear and rentals or a relaxing pint at Double Groove Brewing. The original Harlem Globetrotters are returning to the APG FCU Arena on February 21st. Don't miss your chance to be a part of the world-famous Harlem Globetrotters global tour as they take the court with moments of extreme basketball innovation and unparalleled fan fun. Get your tickets and a magic pass at harfordevents.com. The Phoenix Festival Theater is bringing the SpongeBob musical to the Amos Center on March 8th through March 10th. Again, get your tickets at harfordevents.com. And just announced, Rapola Entertainment has Plush coming to Zen West on April 27th on their Find the Beautiful tour with Circuit Villains and Veer. Don't miss this high-energy rock and roll show promoted by Pop Riot Music and 97underground.com. Today on the show, I'm sitting down with BJ Kerwin. He's a craftsman, maker of awesome handmade furniture for awesomer people with industrial imperfections, a talented drummer for local greats the last year and 90s alternative rock heroes Candlebox, a coffee enthusiast, and enough personality to make a seaport sailor blush. Through the lens of social media, I've always felt an unspoken kinship with BJ and think I know enough about him to know we're going to have a lot of fun here today and would likely be kicked off of terrestrial rock radio in about 20 seconds. He's got a musical resume a mile long. Join me in welcoming madman, rock and roller, lover of all the good things in life, and birthday boy, Mr. BJ Kerwin, to the Mouthful of Graffiti podcast. BJ, welcome to the Mouthful of Graffiti podcast.
So, first thing, right. Who's the horse? Who's the horse at the end there?
Well, you're in Harford County. So,
wait, what is it, like a specific horse, or is that just like,
oh, I don't know. It was just a free sound effect horse that I pulled and I just started using it. Now, you'll notice there's chickens in the episode. We got cows. It's just an homage to Harford County.
Okay. I'm into it, but we should get you like a, we should find like a cow or like a horse that's important to Harford County. We should get that sound for you because I feel like,
yeah, there used to be a legendary cow, Betsy the cow. And before they built the Chili's in town, that land.
Wait,
was
you guys
not,
have a Chili's here?
We do have a Chili's here.
Why are we doing this here then? Why aren't we at Chili's?
I don't know. We should go to the cigar shop up the road. But they wouldn't sell the land until Betsy the cow died. So that was like this whole thing. And then when Betsy died, they built the Chili's and then the whole shopping plaza.
Is the Chili's like in honor of Betsy, or is there mention of Betsy anywhere?
That would be awesome though. We should go to the Chili's and see if there's a picture of Betsy on the wall. Maybe there is. Because they know the story. They'd have to know the story. They were the first thing there.
They should. Yeah, I agree. Anyway.
So how are you feeling? I know that Friday night you tied one on and you were hurting yesterday to a Predator marathon.
Yes, yes. A Predator marathon slash, well, I watched Predator 1, Predator 2, then Hulu just jumped me right into Alien versus Predator. And I was like, well, there's my segue to the Alien universe. So this morning I woke up and watched Alien. And I feel like shit. I still feel like shit.
Do you?
Yeah. I was with Island, my buddy, and his fiance, Anna, who's I've known forever, on Friday. And whenever we're together, we just get wrecked. It's always 4 a.m. Like, it's,
right.
Yeah.
And you just turned 40, right? This is
41.
Okay. Yeah.
Last year was the big one.
And you know, like from about like the late 20s until now, it just gets worse. It's going to take you till about Tuesday or Wednesday for everything to be firing properly again.
It's funny though, because when I'm on tour, like you just sort of like kind of drink every day because there's really not a lot to do out there.
Right.
You should, if you can do touring and sobriety, you should do that, but it's hard.
That would be very difficult, I think.
But I get used to my tolerance out there, you know, because, you know, you're not like getting trashed every night, but you're having like one or two whiskeys and just kind of sitting on the bus and talking and stuff. But here I am, you know, 4 or 5 months away from that. And I meet up with one of the people that I drink with on the bus and it just doesn't feel good.
Do you think that maybe some of that's offset by just the adrenaline and excitement of touring? Like, you don't have time to feel bad. If you're just at your house, you're feeling everything you're feeling because you have time to think about it.
No, I mean, occasionally you overdo it out there, but like generally speaking, because you're on a big metal tube full of people, you kind of keep your shit together, you know?
Right, to some degree, you have
with a couple exceptions, but when you're at your house and you know,
and you keep it together before you go on stage.
Oh yeah, you don't be drunk on stage. I mean, you can drink on stage.
Well, that was the early 20s. Like everybody got drunk, got on stage, and then they'd go watch the VHS when they got home. You're like, wow, that was great until the next morning.
Yeah.
And then you're like, no, that was actually terrible. We were awful.
Yeah. That's most of your 20s though in music though. You know, you just kind of like, I don't know. I always like to watch video stuff because that's how I got better. I was just like learning. Well, that was terrible. Don't ever do that again.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing, you know?
So do you have a routine other than Predator? Like, for me, it used to be like V8, Red Bull, run 4 to 6 miles, sweat it out, deal with the headache. And that was it.
That was the hangover cure?
For me, that was.
We always get pho. That's been pho or pho, however you want to say that. But that's been the go-to for a while. You start your day with that, and then you're usually up. Because it's health food, right? It's just like soup and noodles and healthy food.
It's kind of like a chicken noodle vibe.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Vietnamese chicken noodle soup. And that usually sets you right. But I got to tell you, this time I did it a little too hard. And I still, today, I'm... Like, I was driving up here, like, I don't even know if I can talk.
Really? Yeah. You know, the thing about it is it's the brain fog that gets me, man. Like, and that's actually why I quit. It was, I had started a new job. I had high blood pressure. And I was like, I couldn't learn things. You know, you work your work week, then you go tie one on for the weekend, and then you get, you know, come back. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to learn all this new stuff. And I'm like, I can't learn anything. And I was like, this isn't going to work. After about 2 or 3 months, I was like, it's been since I was 15 since I've been sober for 3 months. Let's stay over here for a while.
It's weird when you like crack over that, right? You realize you don't need it. A, you feel better. You wake up better. Like, I don't drink a lot at home. I mean, on the road, it's just kind of like something that happens. But at home, I don't drink a lot. But yeah, man, it definitely like just sort of diminishes you if you let it. You know? Like, especially like I realize like if you get home and you have a beer, right? So when my shop wasn't at my house, I would like, you know, maybe have a beer at the shop. Then I would drive home and I would have a beer. And it's just like part of the routine, right? Mm-hmm. Then it's always 4 beers. So you're always drinking 4 beers. And then it's like.
But when you're pulled over, you've only drank 2.
We can talk about COVID driving later if you want. Oh, it's bad stuff. Yeah. Anyway, drinking's bad. Don't drink.
Right. That's the moral of the story here. So when you were a kid, though, you talked about your early 20s. Did you have these fantasies? Like when I was 19, 20 years old, I had this fantasy that I would die by the time I was 25. So it was just like all or nothing every single day. And then obviously 20 years after my expiration date that I was anticipating, I'm still here. Did you have that live fast, die young thing?
For sure thought 40 was going to be it. Well, it's funny too, like hitting 41, it's interesting you bring this up. Just like the whole mortality thing.
Yeah.
Like you just kind of like, I don't know, things that I wouldn't have thought about when I was younger, I think about now. Like if you look at like you go out and drink all night, right? And you wake up the next day and it's like, man, I could have like died in my sleep and that just would have been it. Like you know, or like you just like death never really entered my head at that age. You know, I don't think anybody. So you just kind of do whatever you want. And then. Now there's like consequences.
Like, there are. There are definitely some consequences. Well,
not there weren't always consequences. It's just now like, I don't know. I definitely feel the little sting of time a lot more than I used
It's true. To. And I think when you're younger like that, you want to at least say that if you do die early, like I did experience some really cool things. Like I went to Vegas 24 times, whatever.
Yeah.
I lived it up. And if I die at 25, then I can't say that I was cheated.
That's, you know. I guess that was kind of a thing. My 20s were bananas, though, man. When I was touring with Nikki and stuff, like I hit 30 and I was just like, I don't know what just happened. But the last 7 years was just crazy.
I was going to bring up Nikki and all that later, but this is a good segue. So you're working on some new music for The Last Year, correct?
We are, yes.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, are you recording it at Forest Hill Studio, or was that just you tracking drums at Forest Hill Studio for another project?
Well, we just did the drums there. We used to always do drums either at home or my studio in my shop before. And this time we just needed a spot, and Scott's been working out of that place, so
okay.
Ended up there. It was great, too.
I did want to bring up one thing about the whole idea of being younger, experiencing a birthday, and probably having some reflective time. Like, when you are really young, you have this idea, and you're pretty clear on it, like at 15, 16, 17 years old, you start saying things like, life sucks. Isn't that a weird realization to make when you don't even know why you're here in the first place? Did you have that? Like, we all say when we're kids, like, oh, life sucks. I was thinking back and I was like, wow, you know what? Either I'm a really pessimistic person. I've been watching too many philosophy videos about how everything is pain. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, like, have you gone back and looked, and did life turn out the way you thought it was going to turn out?
I honestly had no idea. It was like that whole thought is like the arrogance and ignorance of youth, right? Like,
yeah.
When you're young, you feel things so much more dramatically. So everything that affects you 1,000% more. As humans go, like the second we hit puberty, we're supposed to be like knocking kids out. So we hit this existential crisis point, I guess, at like, I don't know, 18 or so, yeah. 15 to 18, where you just can't put it all together. And you just, I don't know. That's an interesting idea, though. I don't know, man. That was a lot more philosophical than I was.
Well, if you like that. I started thinking recently about like this whole idea. You're made up of all these cells.
Right.
And if you break that down further, I guess, what is it? Atoms.
Well, yeah.
And then if you break that down further, all the way down, you're just a dull hum. Like, we're nothing. We're literally nothingness that's manifesting into these physical vessels.
Yeah. It's like a haunted meat suit. Right. Well, we get the whole space time thing. We can walk down that road. If you look at like,
you're like, where is this podcast going?
Well, I will happily walk down this road. Like, if you think about our bodies in that way and like just kind of like remove our idea of what's big and what's small and like the space between things, like right. When you zoom in on us, we're just nothing, right? We're the same as like the universe or the stars or like a galaxy to us looks like a solid item, but when you're inside of it, it's nothing, right? It's just like, that's just nothing. It's just a collection of planets that you can only see the whole spectrum from a million miles away. So when you look at a human, you know, and we can go on and on and on and on and on.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it makes sense, though. I guess the long end of the short is why music resonates with all people, you know? So we're all vibrations. I'm going to read the news real quick and then we'll get back.
You went down to vibration. I missed the vibration part of that.
Yeah, you're just a dull hum. That's all we are.
A dull hum. All right, the news. We're ready for the news now.
Are we ready?
Everyone,
for the
just
news?
Think about
it. We're going to come back to it.
Think about a dull hum for a second.
All right. Rapol Entertainment is bringing a tribute to Spinal Tap to everyone's favorite roadside cantina, Zen West, on March 8th. I mean, I've seen the movie. Is there enough songs for a Spinal
That's
Tap
exactly
tribute?
What I was going to ask. Like, I wouldn't know.
I knew the album smelled the glove, but there was a farm sex song, right?
Yeah.
That's the only things I know. Stonehenge.
Stonehenge thing. But I still can't, like, hear the song that goes with it.
No, just the thing that happened.
I want to know what the ticket sales are like for these things.
I don't know. It didn't say that they're like support acts. So I'm like, okay, I guess this is anticipated to sell out.
Yeah, this is a fucking standalone thing.
I have so many questions. Like, is there a rider? Is there a guarantee? Have you played Zen West?
That's in Annapolis, right?
No, it's in Towson. It's like a couple blocks up from Wrecker.
No, I have no idea what that is.
So on the left-hand side is kind of like, think of like, it's like Fletcher's or CBGB's. It's like a little rock club.
Cool.
But on the right-hand side, going back to Chili's, it's like a Chili's. So it's like literally split in half. When you walk in, you either go right to Chili's or you go left to Fletcher's. It's really kind of, it's unique. It's actually a very cool room. It's like a nice like mid-size room, you know? Because we don't have a lot of those. It's either the big ones or like, dating myself here, but like the Brass Monkey or, you know, things like that.
I remember that place. I played there one time in like 2001.
Yeah, that's about it. I used to book that place and I did it for about 2 weeks and I was like, that's it. No.
Yeah, booking sucks.
Transcendent Events is bringing Maryland Day Festival back to Power Plant Live on March 23rd. I would be here all morning if I started listing all the performers. As you can imagine, there's a lot of bands and solo acts performing. Are you performing?
No.
All right, Kevin Hawk, if you're listening, get The Last Year booked on the Maryland Day Fest.
Yeah, do that. That'd be fun.
Feed the Scene is bringing Brave the Sea, Ascendamore, and Bone and String to the Waverly Brewing Company, also March 23rd, so you're going to have to pick. And finally, be the first to message me the words, box full of wiki things to win a $25 gift card to the Baltimore Decal Gal.
Okay.
Box full of wiki things would be Candlebox. All right, so fun questions. Oh. Lisa and I were stalking your page last night to come up with like some content for this. Right. Have you always been a space enthusiast? Because this is a new thing for you.
No, it's not new for me.
It's not a new thing.
No, I'm a big space nerd.
okay.
Actually, this ties into my object pretty well.
Oh, what is that?
Is this like the segment we get into what this
Let's
thing
get
is?
Into it right now, yeah.
All right. Well, this is Maverick's motorcycle in Matchbox form from Top Gun.
Okay.
Because I'm a huge aerospace nerd. Hold on. We start with space, though, right?
Okay, well, let's get to space.
That leads. I mean, this is aerospace is my like my backup plan. Like, I was always either going to be a fighter pilot or I was going to be a drummer.
Okay.
And I heard Nirvana and that just ruined everything. And off we went.
NASA was out the window.
Yeah.
No more Goddard.
But yeah, the space thing, I've always just gone to air and space museums and I'm just like fascinated by everything about it, especially as I get older. Like, the like math behind orbital dynamics. Like,
yeah.
It's fucking impossible. Have you ever, like,
No, it is.
When you look at the, what was it?
And how we know what we know. Like, it is more believable to me that aliens came down and provided this information than we figured it out.
I don't know, but we can talk about aliens too if you want to. But
they're in there.
We got a whole fucking, me and my now wife are super into that. The space thing, like, it's not like a mystery to me, like how they came to the conclusions they came to.
Yeah.
It's just, they're just smart and figured shit out. And if you use the you know, our knowledge of like gravity and basic understanding of like why things orbit and how they're held together,
right,
and then you start, you know, add smart people and you get things like orbital dynamics where you can figure out if you launch a spaceship this way at this velocity towards this thing, it'll catch this object and then this object. Like, if you look at what did they just launch, the Artemis 1, the new like space mission NASA's okay. doing, if you look at like the route it took, it's like it goes up, catches some of the moon's gravity, goes past it, catches the Earth's gravity, comes back down, catches the moon again, loops around the moon, and comes back to the Earth. And they just...
But really smart people have to know that that's going to happen.
They didn't know that shit was going to happen, right? Like, that was just good luck. We'll see.
See, here's the problem. Like, if I were to time travel and go back to the past, mm-hmm. I could tell them about all these really cool things we could do, but I would have no idea how to explain to them how to do it.
Yeah, that's a big problem. I don't know. I have no idea how we did it, but
I'd be the most broke time traveler ever.
But you know who's smart back then, right? If you go to, like, you know, find Einstein.
Right.
Tell him what's up and he'll just reverse engineer the thing. So that theory of relativity
thing's pretty cool. It works.
Yeah.
There's this guy at Sunny Day Cafe, and he's known as the magician of NASA. So you can actually type in, his name's William Chambers, magician of Goddard.
Okay.
And if you ever want to have a really deep conversation about space, this is the guy.
Clearly, yeah.
He talks our ears off. What you just described, he could explain the science about like using the moon's gravity.
Yes, that's the guy I want to talk to.
Yeah. You would love this guy.
Yeah. It's so fun too. Like touring, I always run into like NASA people in places and they're not ready for it, but they don't realize how big of a nerd I am. So I just ask a billion questions, you know?
I don't even think it makes you a nerd. I think it's just really, it's really cool stuff.
Oh, we embrace the nerd title around my house.
Yes, good absolutely. Thing. I'm into dinosaurs. I'm into space.
What's your favorite dinosaur?
It's the one with the ball on his tail.
The big, like, swinging aroundy one, the armor one.
Yeah,
looks like an arm. Looks like
it looks like a stink bug, but with the ball on the back tail.
You don't know his name, though.
I don't know his name.
Okay,
all right. Also known as Grimstone from the Transformers cartoon, the Ankylosaurus is a genus of armored dinosaur. Its fossils have been found in geological formations dating to the very end of the Cretaceous period, about 68 to 66 million years ago in western North America, making it among the last of the non-avian dinosaurs. I should have just said the T-Rex so I didn't jam myself up.
Well, I mean, T-Rex is like the easy go-to. I would have said T-Rex
after
too.
I started like saying what it was, I was like, you know what, I can't think of its name, but I can't think of it. I was like, he's gonna ask me the name. So
yeah, of course I am, because you brought it up.
Describe your music the last year or Candlebox to a alien civilization.
God, I don't know even where to start there. First of all, do they live in an environment that allows for sound? That's an important prerequisite.
They do. They do.
Is it
they like, can hear things?
Well, but is it like is it the same like oxygen level as Earth? Because the way they hear things is going to be entirely determined by the physics of the in space which in which they listen to them. So,
I didn't consider all that when I was coming up with this question. Pretend that it's very similar to Earth, but they've never heard the last year. How do you describe?
Never
it?
Heard the last year. Well, there goes all my.
They have no.
It
reference.
Sounds like. What does the last year sound like? I don't know. I don't know if I don't know if I could tell an alien. I would just be like, here's first of all, well, here's music. We'd have to start somewhere, right? We have to build some sort of basis of context of the conversation.
Yeah.
To then which introduce a new thing and to like compare it. So let's just say they're already here and they know what music is. But yeah. They're still an alien, which just makes it a fun conversation with a weird guy in New York. The last year is I haven't thought about how to describe the last year in so long. This is new that we're doing a record, by the way. So like the fact that this is like back in my.
So when was the last record? Was it back when we did that cruise together or?
Oh, God, you guys were on that, weren't you?
We were.
Sorry, things have gone on the gig vault and just erased.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I've seen you on social media quite a bit. I think I've only met you one time in my life and it was on that boat.
I was going to ask if we ever met. Yeah.
That
was
you were doing sound too. Weren't you doing the sound and performing?
Probably.
I feel like you sound checked the band, but then you were also playing drums with the last year.
So it's probably our PA system. Yeah. So that would have been fun. And that probably was around when that record came out. The last one with, what was it called? Static Automatic or the next one? No. Fuck, I don't even know which record it was. That's how long it's been. We also did that like right. We did that record right after my dad died. And I just don't remember like a year after that. So like there's just kind of a missing space in my life where, you know,
yeah,
grief went.
And that particular project, the last year did the Nine Inch Nails cover.
No, that was the Nicky Barr band that did the.
Okay. Nine Were you in that?
Band. Oh, yeah. That was the only difference there was Island was in that band and Scotty was not. So we just basically switched guitar players.
Okay.
After Island went off and joined Chicken Shack and then Candlebox and then dragged me that way.
Right. Do you have any favorite songs or videos planned for this new last year record?
The songs themselves, like, first of all, like I didn't write this record. I just kind of like Nicky and Scott. Sometimes they just go in the basement, you know,
and do the thing. And then you
and just do the thing and I get stuff. And like, this is the first time I've just been like, wow, that's a really fucking good record. Like Nicky's in the spot right now where she's writing, like she's always been kind of jaded, but it's like, it's manifesting itself in a much more interesting way to me this time. She's got like, she's singing from somewhere that matters to her, whether she knows it or not. And it's like, it's awesome. So that,
yeah,
the tunes, there's a song called Sad. It's just so fucking good. I don't even know. Like, I can't wait for it to come out just so people can, you know, have it in their lives as well.
Yeah. She's always had like a little bit of like that little attitude in there, you know? And when you get older, like you were saying, like the musical experience in your 20s is like totally different. Like now I'm starting to get to a point in my life too, where it's like, I've got enough figured out that when I'm writing songs, there's a lot more intent behind what I'm doing.
For sure. Yeah.
And it's the better music, but it's probably less people will hear it now because I'm not younger and they've checked out and whatever.
Yeah. That, and just getting anything heard at all is like, you know, almost pointless. You got to really like to stick around in this business. You got to love doing it. You know, otherwise.
Yeah.
It's just a mountain of heartache.
My buddy was just talking, you know, I don't know if you knew Tony Baltimore down in Key West.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was just talking about, and I think this may be where it's going is people, you know, obviously streaming has lent itself to being more of a singles platform. You know, people are just releasing singles, but there's so much intent on making sure that each single that they release is a single or worthy of being a single that some of like the artsier stuff is just not, it's either not being written or it's not being promoted or pushed out there as much as it used to. And it's probably going to start swinging the other direction because I used to like making albums, you know.
For sure.
Maybe there's a two or three songs you're like, this one's special. We're going to make sure we nail this one.
Right.
But the other stuff is kind of just stuff I'm doing for me because.
You've got to do it for you first, right? Yeah. Otherwise, there's no reason really to create it because you're not really going to make any money from it unless you're, you know.
Right.
In a band that was already fucking famous. There's no real incentive to do it anymore, right? It always seemed like there never really was. You know, it's always just kind of been
right.
For the sake of making it. But I feel like the hope portion is just kind of gone now. So like,
right.
You know, when you commit to making a record, which is a massive undertaking, it's like, you have to be for the right reasons because there's no other reason to make it. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Ain't nobody making a hit anymore. When's the last time you heard a new song on like DC 101? You know, like
that's right.
Never.
So it's one of my pet peeves, terrestrial radio, driving to get breakfast this morning, and it's Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. I'm like,
every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere around like the early 2000s, it seems like terrestrial radio said, okay, that's it. We're done. We're not going to try to find or explore new music. We've got what we've got, and we're just going to keep recycling that. And it's like music that was classic rock when I was a kid is still on the radio. It's like, what happened between early 2000s and 2023? Like, all those voices were just never heard or picked up by terrestrial radio. And it's a huge pet peeve of mine.
Oh, it should be. I mean, Clear Channel just bought everything, and they figured out, you know, like, it's the same reason like an 80s cover band can make a killing right now. It's because people like what they like, and they haven't changed really at all, you know?
I like Ozzy Osbourne. I like Black Sabbath. Mm-hmm. But who's sitting there like, I got to hear Iron Man this morning?
Yeah.
Unless you're like...
Well, there's for sure data that they can look at that says that when we play this song, people don't tune away, right? So it's all like if everything's this giant conglomerate corporation, which it clearly fucking is now... accountants make the decisions, and the accountants look at the, you can look at the metrics and know this. You don't have to take a risk to be successful.
Yeah.
In the music industry. You can keep doing exactly what they're doing forever. And the same, you know, 47 rock songs are just going to continue to be the thing that are played, and everything else is going to, I mean, I'm sure that the paradigm's going to shift again eventually, but like right now it's just stupid. It's so annoying.
The only way, and this doesn't even apply to legacy bands. Even legacy bands are not getting plays with their new material.
Like, oh, not at all.
Maybe Metallica, you know, they might have a new single, but most people don't even want to hear it anyway, which is weird because there actually are some gems on the new record, in my opinion. I would much rather hear something off 72 Seasons than hear, I don't know. Yeah, that.
What the hell's it called? I can't even think of the
Enter Sandman.
Wow. But that's like, I mean... The average person who's listening to the radio is on their way to work. They don't want to like think. They just want the radio to be this, you know, anonymous voice in the background. They get to work, they do the job, they get back in. The whatever's going to show up is also predictable. You know, it's like.
Now you're making me think about like just the idea of the morning show, because most people drive to work and listen to the morning show. There's no music.
No.
They might throw Bush's Machine Head in every once in a while, but Bush. That's you just toured with Bush.
No, we just announced a tour with Bush. We're going out with them for 7 weeks in July.
This is all stuff that I was going to get into later, but like all of this has to be surreal as fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the bands you grew up with.
Well, it's weird. Like the weirdest times aren't when I'm out there with them, because then it's like you're in the moment.
Yeah.
But like when I'm home, it's like, you know, in my underwear, eating pizza off my fucking stomach with a beer. I look at my house and everything, and I'm like, I'm also in Candlebox.
Right.
And it's just like, wow, it's fucking, that's what it's surreal. It's like whenever, because you know, when I get home, that switch just turns off, right? Like,
well, I think what it is like you've crossed over in a way that maybe people who haven't crossed over, they haven't done that. So they don't know. For you, it's become normal, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Now, but even then, like, I mean,
but before it happened, it had to be like, oh my God, what's happening right now?
Yeah. The first, I mean, when I first joined the band, it was definitely like, what the fuck?
I mean, that first record is incredible.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
And like learning those parts. Scott Mercado, the original drummer, plays nothing like I play too. So like kind of finding space in his parts to be myself, you know, has been super interesting and like really kind of changed the way that I've played.
I will say on the new record, just to, you know, talking about like the way you're playing your drums and everything, there's some really cool rhythms. I don't want to end up in the dinosaur situation again. It wasn't ugly. I think it was I Should Be Happy was the song. Oh, there was one of them that had like a...
Yeah, that one's heavy shit.
Yeah, well, there was some really cool drum parts.
Yeah, that one, when we wrote this record, Island and I, have we talked about Island at all? He was the guitar player in Nicky Barr Band. And then he's the one that got into Candlebox before, like long before I did. And he and I have been writing and recording songs for, I don't know, well over 20 years. So Alan and I have done, like, we've just been writing and recording the entire time I've known him. Like, even before the Nicky Barr Band was a thing and we were, like, more hired guns for Nicky, he and I started doing tunes in my mom's basement. So when it came time to write this record, that's kind of the sound that we've sort of existed in for a while. So it's funny that like, kind of snuck through the cracks and got on the record because, like, that one was wacky.
Punks is a cool lead off. It's so juxtaposed to anything from the past, in my opinion. It's... You know, it's more of the acoustic, a little bit of a chant thing going on in the choruses.
Yeah, Punks was fun too. We actually wrote that in Baltimore at we did a songwriting session for a week in at Right Way, which is a fucking awesome studio. Steve's amazing. Yeah, and that song just kind of fell out of the brain. It was like a, you know, sometimes a tune just kind of like happens. Yes. You're like, oh, cool.
Almost like it was already, you're just the receiver of it. It's just coming in.
Yeah, yeah. Just one of those ones that made sense immediately. And a couple other tunes, like Ugly was one where it was like an idea. And where it started and where it ended up were just completely opposite ends of the spectrum, but turned out super cool.
Yeah, the whole record is seemingly, to me, it seems very, it was like an anything goes kitchen sink kind of approach.
That was exactly what we did, yeah.
You
we
know,
did,
like
we,
the first record, it's very mindful, like great songs all the way, but is all stylistically very similar.
Right.
All the way to now, it's almost like you're starting to enter like that Zeppelin-y territory where it's just like, we're just going to try different sounds. We're going to try different song formats. It's cool.
Pretty much. I mean, that was kind of the thing. Like, you know, we talked about earlier, like writing because you want to.
Right.
So we did that. Kevin was very cool and very open. He was just like, we're just going to just throw any song idea, even like I had song ideas, you just throw them all in a bucket and then we're just going to pull them out and start to shape them and see what they are. And there was no, like you said, there was no rules to it. There was no real like format we were trying to go for. You know, it's not like you're going to break Candlebox a second time and like get a new big hit. But I mean, that, you know, it would have been nice. But, you know, the whole record was written with the idea of like, let's just make a record because we want to make a record.
Right.
And it was Kevin's last record. So he was, you know, he just wanted to make the record that he wanted to make the way he wanted to make it.
What was the band? Is Kevin the singer?
Yeah.
What was the band he was in briefly with? Was it Fuel? There was like a hybrid band of two 90s bands. Because we played with him at Record Theater at one point.
The High Watts or was it The Gracious Few?
It was The Gracious Few, I think.
Yeah, Gracious Few was two of the guys from Live, I think.
Live, that's it.
And one or two of the guys PA. From Candlebox. My friend... Or one of the other guitar players for Candlebox, Sean, Memphis Hennessy was in that one too. And I think it was the drummer and the bass player from Live, but I can't be sure.
All right. Before we get into your background, I want to go back. We kind of skipped some of the fun questions. There's always fun questions in the pod.
You bring it on, buddy.
All right. So you're watching the Predator movies. Are there other alien movies that you like other than Predator?
Well, Predator, I can do an entire podcast about my love for Predator. First of all, because it's fucking hilarious.
Rest in peace, Carl Weathers.
Yes, rest in peace, Carl Weathers. Predator is a standalone film that will, like, to me, it's still timeless because just the nature of what they did. You mm-hmm. know, they go into like the jungles of Colombia, and it's just a bunch of like muscly people with machine guns, and there's no real dating of it. You know, there's at no point is it like, if you don't know anything about like military stuff, it just kind of stays the same. Yeah. Even though, you know, it's what, almost 40 years ago now.
Yeah,
1987 it came out. So yeah, I love
it's
that
like movie. Commando with aliens.
Yeah, but Commando is a whole other thing. I found when I on this last tour, I always pick a movie and I watch it a million times so I can fall asleep to it. So the extended version of Commando was my go-to for about a month. It's like 2.5 hours long, and it's
like fucking, the Richard Donner cup.
Oh my God, it's fucking bananas. Like all of the scenes in that movie are like a little longer. They're way more violent. You know, at some point he's using like circular saw blades as frisbees and just murdering people left and right from this little murder hut. Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger's fascinating character.
Have you seen his documentary on Netflix?
We just watched it, actually.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
I love all the iterations of Arnold, but I even love more who he's become. Mm-hmm. And that he wedged that into Dark Fate, the last Terminator movie, where he was just Carl in the movie. Did you see the last Terminator?
Oh, right, yeah.
Well, that's who he is in real life. He's just like, I'm just going to be who I'm in real life. I'm Carl. I'm just the robot trying to blend in.
Right, right.
And he's got his donkeys and... It's like, this is wonderful. But no, I love the guy.
Yeah, he's amazing. And he just doesn't lose, you know, like in a sense, he is all the characters he portrays because like he just got that like he just doesn't stop like whatever it is. You like, know, fucking governor. Come on. How did Arnold Schwarzenegger become the governor of California?
Well, the thing about Arnold is when he does screw up, he owns it.
Absolutely.
I remember when he was on the night show with, I think it was Conan, and Conan was asking him about the affair. And he's like, it was great. It was fantastic. The best sex I have ever had. He's so far beyond what he did or did wrong that he's just like, I'm owning it. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's part of my life. I love it.
I mean, what's he going to do? Like, you know, feel bad about it? I mean, he definitely did. It definitely like derailed his shit. But like at a certain point, you just got to be who you are. And that's why you got to love Arnold fucking Schwarzenegger.
That's it, man. So aliens, grays, Palladians, reptilians. Are you into all that?
No. Just the...
So I think the grays are a thing. I really do.
Which one are the grays?
The grays are just like the little tiny lanky ones, the real smooth bodies with the big eyes. The atypical alien, you know what I mean? Like not the green ones, but the gray version of the green ones.
Well, in my house, our version of aliens will allow for that eventually once evidence presents itself. But right now it's just like purely evidence-based, right? Going back to my Maverick motorcycle here and my affinity for naval aviation.
We kind of just like touched it and then we walked away from it.
But there it is, there standing it is. On its own. The stuff for the F-18s actually used the FLIR to like catch aliens on tape, like the little tic-tac thing. Like that's just
the cigar-shaped ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a thing that happened. That's real, right? So like there's no denying that. It did things that we have and have made can't do. And it just the everything about it, like even Harry Reid has come out. Like Harry Reid started the whole like extra government portion to like research these things. We have no idea what the fuck they are. So like in the context of that, like talking about like what the aliens actually would be or could be is kind of, you know, that's not relevant to me yet because there's no real empirical evidence there. But like here we have a thing on tape that we can't explain that is flying. It is a unidentified flying object. Right. So, you know, that's a fucking UFO is a real man.
We always think of like aliens as being like these technologically advanced things, mm-hmm. but aliens could be just like different species of things, like ostriches with two heads or.
I like to think of like the ostrich overlord idea as a good, we should just start that one. But yeah. I mean, there's no like how did they get here? Were they already here? Like, is this the thing? And I've got a buddy who's in the Navy and flies F-18s. And he was like, this shit's like an issue. Like there's so many.
Like this is a legitimate thing happening. Yeah.
And it's either they were always here and the technology caught up to a point where we can detect them, which with like the Aegis radars and all like the computer aided stuff, like, yeah, they're pulling anomalies out of the system that were either, I doubt they're just showing up, you know, I doubt they were like, yeah, this is a great time to pop in. But
the older I get, the more I do think, I mean, I don't know where you stand on religion, but like the idea, we've only been here for at best, what, 200,000 years mm-hmm. out of like 6 billion. And with that, it all had to start somewhere.
And I just kind of been doing the philosophy thing pretty heavy, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been. I've been down the wormhole with all kinds of things. If you've never gone down the Alan Watts wormhole,
I don't know
that's a whole other thing. But yeah,
okay.
YouTube videos have gotten really good, and I just kind of feel like we were put here, and they just kind of keep an eye on us.
We could have been, but there's also like evolution does make sense, you know?
No, I think that's there too.
Well, yeah, I guess then life beginning in the first place, but also looking at like other planets, like what we were watching last night about one of the Saturn's moons has a geyser outgassing, which means there's water on the planet. And there's like, if there's water, there's probably microbes. If there's microbes, there's life. If there's life there, then we're not special.
Right. And we are just such a finite, small rock in this whole thing. There's got to be more. And if there's not, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think it's ridiculous that we're forced to come here in some capacity with no playbook and fly right.
Yeah.
We kind of fly right because it's kind of baked into the cake, but I'm not really sure why it's baked into the cake.
Why do you think it's baked in the cake? Why do you think we fly right out of the gate?
Because
our inherent tendencies are pure violence.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it's just that this is the way we were raised and, you know, maybe we would just be horrible otherwise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like it's when you get into the moral thing.
Well, it gets into the whole conscious thing. And that's why I was like, the conscious seems like it is baked into the cake. Otherwise, how did we arrive at this is how we're going to run a society and then raise our kids?
Yeah. Well, then like inside of that. All right. So like the sound a baby makes is meant to horrify a person to help the baby to keep the species alive. Right.
Right.
So like there's all these things that are just sort of like built into us, like our fight or flight instincts, even though we're in the safest societies we're ever going to fucking be right now. Yeah, there's all these like animal instincts that are just baked in and you can see them in real time. Like, you know, go to any bar and watch some guy who's had too much drink get in a fight. Like that's his animal instinct to prove dominance because he wants to breed with the other thing, you know? And it's like,
right.
All he wants to do is put seed in that one. And like, because of that circumstance, our natural desire to like, you know, make more of ourselves.
Well, you simplify it like that.
Well, that's the thing, man. It's like, we're a lot stupider than we think we are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Most of the things we do are just pure animal instincts, right? And we can sugarcoat it. We can think about it. Like the more you think about the thing and just like kind of look at our actions, it's like it's just so dumb. We're just so dumb. And it's so rare that we have like the brilliant thought that like pulls us away from that. But even like the smartest person in the world still does basic animal things, right? So there's all these like this like subcode in our routine that keeps us doing these stupid things like wars, right?
Yeah.
Like, why do we need a war for? We have no, there's no reason for that to ever happen again. Yet here we are because.
And what do we have, like three of them going on right now?
Probably. Who knows anymore? I have to stop paying attention every now and again because then I.
Yep. If we go down that road, we're going to completely leave the fun questions.
That's fine.
We should circle back to what is your favorite coffee? Is it Death Wish, Yuban, Sanka? Like what? Your favorite coffee?
Favorite coffee?
What are we having in the morning?
Oh, man. I was just in Australia and my friend Dustin showed up who was in Malaysia. I know, right? Good setup for a favorite coffee. And he brought coffee from Bali. Mm. And we just made that the other day. And it is the smoothest. It almost tastes like chocolate. It was the best coffee I've ever had.
Isn't there a coffee where they feed something, the coffee beans, and then they take the excrement and they make the coffee out of that?
Yes. And I forget what that was. Might have been the Bali one.
I was just going to say. Yeah, I did want to say that you might have drank shit coffee, but it was real good. So I don't want to spoil that.
I don't know if it was shit. If it was shit coffee, I'm fucking game on for shit coffee forever. Yeah, always into it.
All right. Favorite 80s rock album. I obviously know mine's right to your right there.
Favorite 80s rock album. Well, I hate the 80s. Guns N' Roses. I forgot their 80s.
They're kind of on the tail end.
Yeah. Well, it's like the start of the 90s, really.
Like, I don't really get into and or relate with, like, Rat and Kiss. It just never resonated with me. But if I was born maybe 5 years earlier, maybe it would have. I don't know.
Yeah, the whole grandiose 80s thing always kind of bothered me. There's always some tunes that have stuck out, though. Like, I can't think of any of them because I don't like the
80s. It's like the dinosaur thing.
Yeah, but I know the name of mine, Stegosaurus, motherfucker.
All right. Well,
I don't know, man. There's so much about the 80s that I, like hated. Completely, like musically, right. It just doesn't do anything for me. All that like flashy shit and overplaying, and I don't know. What would be the 80s? I mean, Bleach came out in the 80s, right? That was 89, I think. So I could say,
yeah, but I don't know. We wouldn't have known about it until the 90s. But it is a great record. As a matter of fact, I have a funny story. Mm-hmm. Not a really a funny story. Bleach used to be right here.
Really?
Yeah. And so one day, we took it off the wall, and behind it had this gigantic white mushroom on the back of it. We don't know what happened or why it happened. You know, we've had other pictures on the wall. I'm trying to not get away from the mic.
I see where the paint was recently over it. Yeah.
So we cleaned it up, but we had to use bleach on the wall because we wanted to make sure it wasn't mold.
Right.
So we're like, oh, we just use bleach to clean up bleach. We had to throw the record out, but it's...
I was going to say, like, you know, religion's been started over less than that. Bleaching bleach.
Yeah.
For the sake of spores.
And we still don't know why it happened. Like, how a mushroom got on the back of the painting. It's not like there's, like, mold behind the wall that we didn't know about.
No. And I can attest, this is a clean basement. I'm looking around right now. I don't see any evidence of bleach or, not bleach, mushrooms, mold, spores of any kind.
Okay, so it's called the Ankylosaurus.
Did you just look it up?
Yeah.
You should know that. Keep that shit in mind. Keep it fresh. For situations like this.
Yes. Well, that's the thing about podcasts. Well, you know, I've done 140 of these. You still get red light syndrome sometimes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not nervous to talk.
I did a podcast during COVID called Medicine for the Dead.
Medicine for the Dead.
Yeah. And it was a hoot.
It was a video podcast, right? Or
no, it was just audio.
Audio.
Yeah. Okay. But it was a lot of us. It was five people. And my whole thing with starting that was like to get five interesting. Like I was always in this conversation with my friends and I was like, this is fucking wild. Like there's like, all these
people.
I just want to document this for a minute. And so, yeah, 40 episodes later, it imploded because COVID ended and gigs started again, but it was a hoot.
So favorite 80s album. Now that we know it's an 80s album, would have been Bleach.
Yeah. I probably got one in somewhere.
So there were some really good ones on the tail end of the 80s. Like Faith No More's The Real Thing is a great record. And it's not that 80s, like, I don't know, Warrant Winger, Poison. That stuff is kind of stuff when you were growing up with it, it was kind of fun. And if you're drinking, it can still be kind of fun. Like my buddies and I will throw on Steve Perry songs or whatever when we're drinking because it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not something that like, oh, we're going to queue up the Spotify now and pull up.
It is true. Like when you,
Uncle Tom's Cabin.
I've definitely been drunk in a bar and like Don't Stop Believin's come on. And I've been like, oh my fucking God.
Right.
Not a lot, but it's definitely happened.
Actually, we had a Journey tribute band at the APGFCU Arena recently. And they had more hits than I realized. You would never know because every cover band only plays Don't Stop Believing.
Well, that's the one. It's like America, too. I saw America a while ago, and it was like 2 hours of songs I didn't know that I knew.
Right.
Or that were by then. Like every, basically every singer, songwriter, 70 song was America, and you didn't know it.
Yep. All right. 90s. Your favorite 90s record.
Ooh, 90s record. Probably
Zero. It's the first Candlebox record. And
that's in there somewhere. Definitely In Utero. Yeah.
In Utero.
In Utero is my favorite 90s record. Although,
do you think that that was the best Nirvana record?
I think that was the most honest Nirvana record. Although, I don't know. I'm like, I've always been a Nirvana. Like, Nirvana is why I play music, right? Mm-hmm. I do a whole podcast on Nirvana, too. And, like, the older I get and the more I look at all those tunes and I look at that thing, like, the same band put out Milk It and Dumb. And that, like, just that little thing right there, or like the acoustic record and In Utero exist in the same universe. And it's like, what the fuck combination of things created that? Like, it's insane, right? And like, the further you get away from Kurt Cobain as like an adult, it's like, I'm looking at a child now
who
kills himself at the end of this story. And it's like, it's just so weird to like kind of jump in his brain and kind of see what's going on in there, because I don't know, they're just, it's just fucking bananas, like the whole thing.
Well, I also wonder, like, what they would sound like today. Like, how would they have evolved? Because he had a lot of raw talent in there, and it was only going to get better. So just playing, like, up to his ability at the point would have changed. He would have gotten better and better and better. So the entire sound would have almost not made sense at a point. Like, they're not going to go back and re-record a Bleach sounding album because he would have been far too talented, and we would have known that. When they done Unplugged, we knew, oh, this band has way more potential than we're giving them credit for, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Where Did You Sleep Last Night? Like, come on. That's still like...
rips me apart.
It rips you apart. It's like, that's one of the most like empathetic, perfect performances of anything fucking ever. You know, it's like, it's just ridiculous. I'm just goosebumps thinking about it.
I just had them. There were certain songs I used to listen to when I drank, and it was Johnny Cash's Hurt. Where did You Sleep Last Night? That was definitely in there. Just those ones that you're just...
Yeah, Johnny Cash's Hurt is like that's a special
Heart's version of Stairway. Oh
yeah. We can talk about Hurt, the music video for Hurt, and the way they when they did the video, like the song is amazing, but the video just makes it this whole other fucking experience. You know, you're just like, it rips your soul out.
It does.
And the way that they mixed it, so the end kind of like they sort of push it into a compressor, so you just feel this like pressure building, and then it's just like done. Ugh,
that one's well, good one. It just really tells the story that I think Trent would have tried to tell with a song.
That's basically what he said. He was like, that's not my song anymore. That's Johnny Cash's song now. Like, right. He just gave it up. Like, there's just no fucking way I can ever do anything like that.
We actually had a Johnny Cash tribute band at the Amos Center last year, and he played it.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of cool. It was a tribute to Johnny Cash, but it was part of the set. You would have thought maybe he would have left that on the cutting room floor, but nope. It was in there.
I mean, that's like, that's part of the Johnny Cash story now, you know, it's a huge thing.
So Bleach, In Utero, how about 2000s?
2000, man, I just stopped.
That's like, where I kind of, I'd have a hard time with that.
It's like, for me, especially like Nirvana put this seed in my brain of what I like musically, right? Like there's this combination of like angst and sound that mush together to become the sound that I like to listen to. And it's so rare to find things that move the needle like that. But every now and again, what's that?
Bollocks did that.
Oh, right on.
Great record. It's got that angst and sound, and it was the perfect thing at the perfect time. But looking back at it, is it a great record? It still stands up.
Well, I mean, it's like, if it does the thing for you, then it's whatever it is. Like, music is all about how you feel about a thing, not how I feel about a thing.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And like, I found a couple, like Thrice definitely has a bunch of things that have.
That's an interesting band too.
The singer is just, he's just got like, there's a quality about singers, especially that like, if you have that depth of soul where you can tell they're singing because everything inside is on fire. And like what is coming out of their face is a representation of that. And that's like, that always draws me in.
Yeah.
There's actually a new band we played with in Texas called Post Prophet. They just put this record out called a Self-Defacer or something, but it's like fucking good. And it's not famous by any stretch of the imagination. They're like, you know, kind of up and coming band, but like it's a really fucking good record, and it does that thing, and I've been listening to it over and over and over again trying to figure out why I like it so much. And it's just that combination of like angst and energy and lyrical content, and like it just puts this other thing there for me.
Yeah.
Metric was another one.
Okay.
Metric's got that
metric
thing.
Thrice.
Yeah.
There's some great bands in the 2000s, but like I was saying earlier, terrestrial radio didn't really give them a voice. And so we don't know of them.
It's the line in the sand, right? Like, yeah. I have a theory that in 2003, people stopped getting famous. You know, like there's a couple that have popped through, but not like, like the era of like an up and coming band, like you're hearing a new song on the radio, they're touring, you get the ticket, you go to the thing, you do the thing. Like that's just not, doesn't happen, right? Fucking Aerosmith is coming back around again for the 900 millionth time, but like there's no.
He broke his voice.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe not.
His larynx. That example. I know what you mean now.
Yeah. I mean, it's like over like fucking Candlebox. You know, we keep touring. Like there's no space. Not that there's no space, but there's just not. I don't know. It's like Candlebox and Bush are touring. It could be 1997 right now. There's no new artist on that bill. So it's like, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of sucks that, well, like, I don't know what I think that's probably around the time that like the accountants kind of started making the decisions because
maybe so,
you know, plus streaming changed everything. The whole dynamic changed, but there's just not like new artists coming out like they were.
Well, I'm glad Candlebox is still around because I was a huge fan. They were one of those bands, kind of like the bridge between like the 80s that you were saying that like it was getting a little bloated and the 90s. And I would put them in the same category as like a Soundgarden, even a Saigon Kick, where it's like they weren't really trying to do the 80s thing. They were just a product of being in that environment at that time.
For sure, yeah.
But then they also were like moving the needle to more minor scales, different songwriting approaches. And Candlebox was in there. And I think that that's why maybe they didn't get to the height of like a Nirvana, Pearl Jam, because they weren't quite that sound, but they were still a really great band. And just,
yeah. Kevin always says it's like there's a documentary coming out pretty soon too, that if you're into it, like
I'm into it.
Yeah. It's all there. Yeah. Candlebox just always fit in this funny spot in the grunge thing because they were neither here nor there. They were like, you know, a little after the fact.
Yeah.
The first record came out in 93. So like grunge is already a steamroller by that point, right?
Yeah.
Almost apexing and ending too.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of at the end of that thing.
Kind of like a Blind Melon thing, I would think.
Yeah. Like, but like, you know, name three Blind Melon songs, unless you're a fan, then shut up. Or like name five Candlebox songs. You know, they'd like, I can do both for Pearl Jam and Soundgarden and stuff, but just kind of like sat on the edge of that thing. It's like the little bastard stepchildren of the grunge movement.
Yeah.
But yeah. Blind Melon's a great example too. I mean, very like Zeppelin-y and
Jellyfish.
Yeah, Jellyfish.
There were some really cool bands that just didn't pop through.
Yeah. We know who they are, though.
But just, you know, Candlebox did pop through.
Yeah.
They had at least two or three big hits on that record.
Yeah, right back to back. It was Cover Me, You, and Far Behind.
You know, You is the one. That's like another one of those, like, that gets right in the soul.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care about like whether songs have expletives or not, but a perfectly placed expletive can really send a part home. And that part that fuck you,
yeah.
I don't want it anymore. it's so perfect. I'm sure like when you're performing it, everybody's just like, fuck yeah.
Oh, it just builds to a massive crescendo right there too.
Yeah.
That old bridge section, we put a stop where the fuck you is now. So it's just like, you know, 10,000 people, fuck you.
Right. You should do the Metallica thing and just drop all the lights or do something with the lights.
But yeah. If we had a light guy.
Yeah. We've covered a lot already, but your background. I want to know prior to Nirvana. I want to like the early genesis of BJ Kerwin. Like, what records were you introduced to, happenstanced upon that like, yeah, I really want to do this. I'm really into music.
I wasn't.
Okay.
Straight up, I wasn't at all. It's funny, like music has always been around me. My dad was a drummer. My uncle was a drummer. Mm-hmm. My uncle was a drummer who toured, which kind of made this whole lifestyle accessible to me. But it was never, I didn't fucking like anything forever. I don't like, there was no favorite records.
Yeah.
But I remember I was handed Nevermind on a school bus by my friend Danny Rule. I could see the bus. I could see where we were going. It was like a field trip in DC. I remember going home, putting in the tape player, and like I hit play and music started to make sense to me.
Okay.
But there was not a single point before that. But I was around so much of it that like just through osmosis, it kind of like, long before I could play well, I had an ability to like, I always knew where one was, right? Because my uncle was in this crazy jazz band. So I would just go see all these mathematicians play with no real idea of like what they were doing or why they were doing it.
Everybody solo at the same time.
Yeah. So it was like, it was permeating my brain, but not really impacting me until I heard that, until I heard fucking Smells Like Teen Spirit. And I was like, all right, well.
Do you do any backing vocals or can you sing at all?
I've sung a lot in other bands.
Yeah.
Yep.
You feel comfortable doing that or?
Yeah. It's just kind of, it's never, I'm like, I'm not a good singer, but I can fill a void if needed.
Yeah. Singing's kind of a weird thing because I think the people, well, people think that you can either do it or you can't. And I think there is some of that baked into the cake. There are definitely people that come out of the womb that can sing.
For sure, yeah.
And there's definitely people that have to work at it. But I don't really subscribe to the idea that people simply cannot because they know when it's wrong.
That's a good point. Yeah, you know, there's a bad singer, but I think the internal mechanism to like understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's, you know, person to person. Everyone, I mean, we can all sing.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Good or
not,
bad, right?
Maybe not with others.
Right. I remember, you know, and singing's kind of a whole other topic, but I was taking lessons with Steve Whiteman, and he was just like,
You did that too? Yeah. That fucking spawned some good singers, man.
But he was just like, you know what? He's like, there's nothing wrong with your singing. It's your confidence. You have no confidence. And if you don't have confidence, you're going to second guess, you know, as you approach a note. You got to be fluid with it. And just hearing somebody tell me that I respected that I could do the thing, I was like, okay, I can do the thing. Same with drums? Or did you always like feel like you could do it? Or did somebody come along and be like, somebody you respect, and it's like, you're really good at this?
I always kind of could.
Like, yeah.
Like I said, I was always around drummers, and my dad would like pick me up and put me on the drum set. And I was like 9. So it was always this thing like that I could do. Like when I joined Nikki's band, I wasn't the drummer. I was a guitar player, keyboard player, and backup singer.
So music just comes out of you, man.
I just always kind of could, you know? I definitely have to like practice and things, but I never really.
Was it one of those things where you just knew enough theory that you could find your way around things?
Well, I never took a lesson in my life, never did any theory.
Okay. That's interesting because like I can play the piano if I sit down and write a part because I know enough theory to like find my way around it, but mm-hmm. I couldn't just do that without the theory. I would need some.
Well, I mean, like when I started, it was like I said, Nevermind happened.
Right.
And then my dad got me a guitar for Christmas one year, and I just sat in my room with this fucking guitar and learned Nirvana songs. And then when I finished Nirvana songs, I started learning Stone Temple Pilots songs. Then I got into like this and got into that. And then drumming was always kind of a thing there. And I was like, before I knew it, I was in bands. I mean, like 2 years later, I started bands. And I would just kind of rotate depending on what was needed at any time. And if it was guitar playing or singing or playing the drums or anything. And in doing that, you just kind of learn how music works. And then once you know how it works, then I don't know. It's always just been kind of a logical thing for me.
Hey, man. Full Sail University. I'm bringing this up because it sounds like maybe your earliest bands would have been either tail end of high school or during Full Sail's years.
Yeah, around then. It was the entire time I was in high school, I was always in a band from like 14, probably 13.
Okay.
Was when I started doing band stuff. And then, first of all, don't go to Full Sail.
Okay.
Don't go to any engineering school.
Where is Full Sail?
Doesn't matter. I don't want to get that place anywhere.
Yeah.
Fuck that place.
Screw those guys.
Yeah. If you want to get in the industry, just go get in the industry. Start working at a club. Figure it out. Like, don't spend money down there. But if you do go, here's the cheat code. I learned that they needed people for recording sessions all the time. So artists.
Okay.
So at that school, you don't see a recording studio for like a year.
Yeah.
And so I just started signing up for artist sessions. So I spent the entire year in the studio. So by the time I finished the thing, I had spent, you know, probably 100 more hours than anybody else in there. So I knew everything pretty intimately and had learned production stuff and just kind of, I don't know, just all the brains you come in there. You spend more time with the instructors. Other than that, though, don't go to Full Sail.
Don't go to Full Sail. That's a lesson here. Yeah. Anything that people that don't know you don't know? Like, did you go through an emo phase in high school? Can you swallow swords? Are you a descendant of George Washington? Like, I'm just riffing now. I'm just trying to paint the full picture of BJ before we get into why you're actually here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, we could talk about that stuff in a second. What's another? I don't know, man. I just kind of learn stuff, like kind of everything. But if I get into something, like I don't stop learning about it. I'll just kind of get like.
So you like to learn. You like to be.
Yes, I love to learn things. Know. And I love to like, I just love to figure shit out, right? Like if something breaks in my house, instead of calling somebody, I'm like, I'm definitely smarter than most plumbers. So I'm pretty sure I can figure out how to plumb this. And then I just.
Right. And you just learn it.
Learn it and do it. Yeah.
That's why I enjoy your posts a lot of times because I get the impression that you're an intelligent person. By the time you are typing out whatever you're going to type, it's been simplified down to like, no, he knows what he's talking about. He gets it. It's not like
– yeah, the conveying a message.
The 400-word post where it's like they're trying to figure out as they're saying it. You get right to the point.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I've definitely written long things with some like grandiose intention. Don't think about
long things if you know what you're saying.
Well, but then I would just delete it because the thought will kind of, you know, sit in the back of the brain for a while. And posting stuff too is always interesting. Like that whole social media thing has always been interesting to me. Like between the politics stuff and like,
it got nasty over the past 6 years.
Well, everyone's fucking stupid now. So that's a big problem.
You had mentioned in one of my posts, you said something like, well, maybe you're not good at arguing politics. And it was that I've been doing it for so long that it got to the point where it's like trying to explain to people that they're wearing their underwear on the outside of their pants.
Right.
And then them arguing and telling
this is something I said to you.
But it said something like, I'm so tired of arguing politics on Facebook. And you said, well, maybe you're not that good at it. And I said, well, I was good at it. As a matter of fact, I lost a lot of friends over it. But over like 4 years, I did it. And then I was like, I'm done doing this because it's like, sir, you're wearing your underwear on the outside of your pants. And they're like, no, I'm not. Like,
well, the logic thing has gone out the window.
No, it's just as I'm.
That's why, like, that's really why I tuned out too, is like, I can't handle. I don't want to talk about those people at all. Here's a broad statement there, though.
Yeah, just keep it broad.
I've seen, between touring and stuff, I've seen basically like the breadth of American power throughout the world, right? And like, I have an understanding that it's not like, it's when it comes to blowing things up, it's never going to be a problem here. We are not ever going to be weak. And like, I have a pretty fundamental understanding of like that whole system. And then when people come in and have no idea how that works and just start saying shit, it's like, you have no idea what you're talking about at all. And it's like, I wish you would just take the time to learn.
Yeah, it's kind of like at work, if you're working with somebody and they're in a different department, they don't know what you do, and then they start speaking to it and you're like, look, man, I do this every day. You don't know what you're talking about. And so
I was gonna do the thing where I can make an argument against that too, because you know the paradigm's always gonna shift. But it's like, then even then it's like, I don't know, it's the burden of intelligence, right? Like it hurts to think.
So I did want to talk about this because you mentioned this morning on Messenger, The Long Goodbye. We've talked about the record a little bit, the diversity on it. You also brought up mushrooms and the process that they played in the making of the record. And I think that's even more fascinating after listening to it and telling you that it's like a very kitchen sink kind of approach. So talk to me about mushrooms in Los Angeles.
This is like a multi-part thing too, I think. Right before COVID, I had like my dad died. I got divorced. I had all this awful shit happened, right? It's a good setup, I promise. And I was like, I always heard about microdosing. Everyone would say like you just kind of like rewire your brain and all that kind of stuff. And I had done mushrooms once before. I took way too much.
Well, they're treated for anxiety now, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But I basically like I touched space one time via mushrooms when I was like 27. And
you touched space?
Oh, I took like an eighth something. I mean, I ate a lot of fucking mushrooms and I woke up inside of a Tron grid and like.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I was. All like as high as you
deadly could. Discs just coming at you, or
possibly no like no interaction, just like I was looking at my clock, it was 3:33 in the morning, it started to pulsate because there's people playing music in the basement and it just exploded out in this big grid, and then it was like Matrix. I would pick up things that I knew were real to make sure, and I looked at my hand and my hand was melting. I was like, that's not real, but I know I have a hand, so I'm gonna focus on the hand part of the portion of the thing.
Were you seeing like tracers? And
I was in a full-on, literally in it, like the room was a geometric green grid, and then it turned red when the music downstairs got me, and it was a weird night. And we were set up to do a week of songwriting at the studio in Bel Air in California, like Fresh Prince of Bel Air,
right?
Not this Bel Air, the Bel Air. And before that, we played in Vegas, and Kevin always makes a joke during which song is it? I forget. One of our tunes he was on mushrooms when he wrote it. It's one from the first record. But he always makes this joke at the end, like, if you guys get any mushrooms, make sure you share. So sure enough, we're at the bar after this thing.
Right.
And this chick shows up and hands me a trash bag full of mushrooms. I mean, Jesus. It was like an ounce of caps and a bunch of chocolates she had made. She's
following a horse around, or what was going on there?
I don't know where this magical lady came from. I even thanked her in the credits for the new record, actually. I don't know her name. I just called her Mushroom Lady. But she gave me this big bag of mushrooms, and I was like, this is interesting. So I gave the caps to my friend, and I took the chocolates with us because I didn't want to fly with, like, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, potential federal felony.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
And we started doing the songwriting session in L.A. at this amazing studio called La La Mansion with our buddy Don Miggs was producing. This is just the songwriting, though. And every night I would go back to my hotel room by myself, and I would just start eating these things, right? And what happened,
which naturally,
which I didn't expect. Like I would just eat a chocolate, which is like a, I don't know, half a gram or something before I went to bed. And like, I would go to war with myself in my dreams. I would have like literal things, and I would wake up every night. I would like some thing that I was dealing with would just sort of arise,
okay,
and be dealt with and then depart. And every day I woke up feeling like literally lighter. Like it was weird.
So it was activating your subconscious and you were dealing with things.
Yeah. I was literally like dreaming my way through trauma.
But these lucid dreams where you were aware you were in them doing them, or,
you know, I don't really know. I know there was definitely like, it's more of a feeling now than a memory, but it was definitely like an interactive experience where I was taking care of my own demons. So as we're writing the record, I'm waking up every morning, like feeling just more refreshed and like going to the studio, and put it like 7 days in a row, I did this, and I took, you know, a not insubstantial amount of mushrooms every night. So I was basically just high for a week. But when I left it was like, that was kind of the beginning of my life now, where like everything is kind of good and I've removed a lot of negativeness and toxicity and really feeling like I'm on a track. And I really, it's because of mushrooms in Los Angeles.
Well, the record's great, and I read some of your posts going back. It's nice to know that you got through like all that stuff from, I guess it was 2020 till about 2021.
That's what I'm referring to?
No, just like the dark period.
Oh yeah, it was real dark in there.
But I think some of that probably came out through the dreams too, right? Or
for sure, yeah. And like that kind of stuff, and like the whole pandemic thing was weird, and then. There's something about the pandemic that was interesting, like the alone time, you know, like and even doing the podcast really like made me think and sort of address myself really for the first time in a while. And I had a nervous breakdown about halfway through. Like, I don't remember what night that was. Sometime during the podcast thing, but like, yeah, it was just a mess, man. It was a fucking mess. And then Candlebox came out of the blue, you know, this whole thing, and kind of saved me. It was weird. So like between that and mushrooms, like,
well, that was the thing. It was like one day you just posted that you were joining Candlebox and was like, what?
Yeah, that's pretty random. It was funny too. Like that was, you know, when that started, that was a completely unexplained. Like it was sort of on the horizon because my best friend's in the band, right? The other guitar player is my ex-girlfriend's cousin, Brian. I've known Kevin forever. And we did a couple of music videos. Or I did a couple of music videos with them during COVID too. And yeah, man, it was like I started to get, it was in the wind that I might get a phone call, but like nobody gets that fucking phone call, right? So like I just sort of put it aside, put it on a mantle, and then it came, and it was like, oh my god, like what do I do? Like, am I good enough? Can I pull this off?
Is like, so did you have to fly out there, learn a bunch of songs, and
no, man, it was all just happenstance. They were playing in Baltimore on a Monday. I got the call on a Thursday.
Okay,
so the call came in. I freaked out, threw up for like 2 hours. Eventually, said yes, I'll do it, because I just like the furniture thing had kind of exploded at that point, and I've taken on a bunch of new work and stuff. And yeah, man. They showed up on a Sunday, bus rolled in, and then we rehearsed in my shop for like, I don't know, 8 hours or something. Like I was kind of up to speed. No
pressure, but yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, it was crazy. And like doing the cover band stuff I had done for so many years, I was pretty used to like, just like slamming songs in my brain and getting them out again. And we rehearsed for like 8 hours, and then I was on the bus the next day, and then I was just in fucking Candlebox, and I had a 6-week tour, got home, and I figured he can call anybody, right? Like anybody can be the drummer for this band. They were just in a pinch right then. And I figured it would be one tour and I'd be like grateful and I would go home. And then the next tour and the next tour.
I know that they could just call anybody. I think having that connection to Island who could vouch for you. I mean, you can't just bring somebody into the band. They have to be able to trust the person. They may know people.
Well, that's the thing.
That are very good.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, but that's, lots of people are very good. You know, it's like talent's almost a byproduct or an afterthought. With that level, like when you're doing like big stuff like that, like there's people that just can do that, right? They're known quantities. They will learn your stuff. They will play the thing. And so to get invited to that circle without any resume really in that area was like, shit. Okay. And that's why I thought like I was just going to do one quick tour and then be out. But
I mean, you're living a lot of our dream.
Yeah. That's not lost on me either.
Yeah. And so like I was on your LinkedIn and it's like Candlebox. I'm like, that's pretty cool to put on your resume.
Yeah, that's the last time I went there too, to put that there, and I haven't been back since.
So, and you guys just got back from Australia.
Yes, we did.
I saw a lot of pictures of cool animals. Now, you said it's very far away. How far away is it?
It took me almost 24 hours to get there.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was 6 hours to San Francisco and then 15 hours to Australia.
Is there like a layover point? Like, are you flying to Hawaii and then flying or... So if you don't like planes, this is like a hellscape.
It's a Martian hellscape, yeah. And like, I'm obsessed with aviation, like we've talked about. So I have all my charts and things up while we're flying. So I know when like turbulence is going to happen. And it's like, we had a flight a couple of years ago where that we hit a storm and it was fucking terrifying. So I'm like, it unnerved me.
It's like
me.
That Twilight Zone. Dude, with the guys on the wing.
It was like, minus the alien factor there, which, you know, maybe there was an alien in charge, but like we hit the edge of a storm on the way up and the fucking people were screaming, dogs were levitating. Like it was a horrendous experience.
And you're all mushrooms.
Oh, I was. Was that around then? No, it wasn't. yeah, it scared the shit out of me. So like now when I fly, I want to know what's going to happen before it happens. Yeah. So I have all these charts and like turbulence things and like the whirlwind and shit. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hitting turbulence over the Pacific Ocean in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
It's like, it's fucking horrifying.
Like I fly to Vegas usually about twice a year and that 5 hours is enough.
Yeah.
Like that's enough. It's just too much fear. Like I still fear the entire time I'm up there that this can't really be happening. Like I don't even understand the science of how this is possible.
Right.
So therefore, because I don't understand it, it's not possible and it's just going to fall out of the sky at some point.
Yeah.
You know, but,
well, it's like, what's funny for me is I know better, right? I know we're not going to die, but I still have this fear because of this one experience. And I've done crazy shit on airplanes. I've been in a C-130 and a nosedive floating in the back of the thing. And like, turbulence scares me now. I feel like a pussy.
No, man. Because some of that turbulence can drop you what feels like about 2 feet. Like,
oh, we fell like hundreds of feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. literally, dogs were levitating. Island's got a great story of the dog sitting on the thing next to him, literally floated up. Yeah.
That was horrifying. Favorite song on the record before we move on from that? Because we're going to hear it at the very end.
Oh, cool. Elegante is probably my favorite right now.
Elegante is a good one.
Yeah. There's one that didn't make it called Washed Up. It's also awesome.
Is Elegante the one that kind of starts with, it's almost got like a U-type riff? There's one of them starts with like, almost like an homage to you. It's got that like 2-4 kind of. I felt like there was an homage to you on the album.
I mean, if there was, it was a coincidence. I don't think we were really thinking that hard about it. We had a couple songs that got cut that I was going to actually do some references to Mercado and like some crazy intricate stuff, but we didn't do them. So
could you, are those things recorded at all? Or
yeah, there's the whole, we have 2 weeks of we did 2 weeks of songwriting, one week in LA and 1 week in Baltimore, and there's like a million ideas that are in a hard drive somewhere.
So you could put like a super deluxe out at some point.
They're not that done.
Okay. So that's an interesting question. I brought this up on Facebook not too long ago. Super deluxe editions, like as a Nirvana fan, and you got this 30th year anniversary of In Utero. It's got like 80 tracks on it,
right?
Probably 10 tracks that nobody's ever heard of. Do you like that, or do you kind of feel like it soils the memory a little bit?
Well, for those that record specifically, for us true Nirvana fans, we've already heard all of that stuff, like Outcast Aside One, Outcast Aside Two,
Wet Vagina, that kind of thing.
Yeah, all that stuff was already out, except for You Know You're Right was never out, but I remember hearing a little snippet of it live somewhere a long time ago. But I don't know, man. It kind of like Soundgarden did that for Super Unknown too. And they released a bunch of rehearsals and they sound bad. And it kind of bummed me out, man. It was like, you know, they kind of sound like shit in the rehearsals.
Right. Right.
Like parts aren't figured out yet. They just sound bad. It's you know.
That's kind of how I feel about, like, everybody's got their favorite bands when they were a kid. Yeah. Obviously, the one to your right was mine. But like for the past 15 years, they've done nothing to expand upon that legacy. So it's like every time they release something, I'm like just more and more disappointed.
Well, you keep saying they as if it's a collective decision. It's just Axel now. He owns all the rights.
Yeah, I guess. So, yeah. It's like we keep just getting these, whatever these tracks are. And it's just like, these are terrible songs. There's a reason you didn't release these in the first place.
Yeah.
Your live performance is, I mean, the band's great, but he's not.
No.
And, you know, I just try to tune out. But yes, it's almost like less is more at a point sometimes.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, if Nirvana had a bunch of songs that were recorded that I'd never, ever heard, like I heard nothing of, I'd be super interested to hear that. Or like, you know, even Soundgarden, I guess. But like, they're just, the demos of those things are just so unlistenable.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm also weird there. Like Andy Wallace's mixing from that era, like, you know, Nevermind, Super Unknown, Deftone stuff. like, I love that sound, and like, I can't listen to like Black Sabbath because it sounds just
back to the terrestrial radio full circle.
Yeah, yeah, I just can't, it just doesn't do anything for me. But when people cover it or I hear live stuff, it's amazing. But like the actual recordings that people like fucking die by, like, I just,
yeah,
it's never done anything for me. And it's so weird. It's like, I feel bad about it.
In that closet to your left is, I found like 70 recordings of just tracks that never were released.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I had put that on Facebook in the first place was, would people be interested in this? And the problem is, if you put it on like Spotify and nobody's ever heard of your band, which most, that would be most people that would go find my band.
Right.
And they hit play, that could be the first thing they hear. That's not what I want. But at the same time, I kind of want to share this to people that were fans. So I'm kind of like in this seesaw with the whole thing. Like if I go to the Sex Pistols page and they have like these old recordings, I'm like, I'm interested in it, but like, I don't know if like I should put it out there.
Yeah. I'm of the mind, like, if you're going to do it, just do it. Like, just put it out, because it really doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
You know, like, as much as we want to, like, you know,
people have already made up their mind of what they think of you. And
for sure. And if they went in the first place, they, you know, awesome. Cool. Yeah. You got there. And you can also pin a song now, I just learned. You can put a top song on your own profile.
I didn't know that.
For Spotify. Some other band, I just saw do it. Or like artist pick, I think is what it's called. But I don't know, man. I feel like if you feel like it's something that should be out there, then just put it out there, because whatever. The worst thing that's gonna happen is nobody listens to it. The best thing is somebody listens to it and it does something, you know? Like,
yeah.
But you never know till it's done.
To me, it's kind of cool because it seems like it kind of like it fills in the rest of the story. So if the record ended up coming out and it was like 10 songs and these 10 songs kind of sound like these 10 songs, well, you didn't hear the other 5 or 6 songs that didn't make it, or just all, they're wacky.
Right.
And I think it's kind of like, this was actually going on too. And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So maybe you could finish some of those songs out there.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of ideas still floating around in the thing.
So the whole reason that you're on the show, the reason you reached out is you're going to be doing remote recordings.
Yeah. So that was... I'm sort of at this point in life where I'm like, what the fuck am I actually doing? Like, what do I want to do when I grow up?
Right.
And it seems like every time I sort of put music away and think I'm done with that portion of my life, it, you know, Candlebox happens, some other crazy thing. Like, right. Even this year, like, I thought Kevin was retiring and now we're doing this 7-week tour again. So it's kind of like put up or shut up time. And I love recording. I love being on records. I love like new artists. I just love being part of that process. And the best way I can do that right now is to just kind of do it from home. Cause you know, as long as you have a good sounding room, you can record drums anywhere. And, we've got, sort of a good process for doing that. Or we sort of developed that during COVID. It was a kind of a remote recording way where there's an engineer somewhere else that basically like takes over my studio while I'm in it and produces from afar.
Yeah.
So like technology has been a big help there. And plus it's just like, you know, fun to do. So
and you do session work as well, right?
I do a lot of session work. Yeah. But this was like that's what the goal of this is that I don't go somewhere for session work. I can do it from my place. And I just feel like I haven't given music and me the respect that it deserves. So at this point I'm like, you know, I just kind of gotta be this thing that I apparently am.
It's what you are, man.
I know. It's yeah. Funny. It's like, but not to me. It's always like, I'm always my own worst critic, you know, like any artist is, but like, you know, I've played music on 6 continents and in 30 countries, and I've played for like last year was like 500,000 people.
And like, one of the best 90s bands.
Yeah. It's like all this crazy shit. And like, I never really like think of myself in that light. And it's like, I never give what I've accomplished the credit it deserves. So now it's just like, I should stop bitching and just be a drummer, you know, like just let myself sort of embrace that. Cause as weird as it is to say, like where I'm sitting right now, it's like, it's just kind of always been something else that I did, not like the thing that I did. So yeah, I'm trying to steer the ship into actually making that a priority in my life instead of a thing in the background that just takes everything over every 6 months, you know? Like,
And I don't think at this point in your life, it's not like even if you had interest in other things, like, are you going to be proficient enough in those interests to justify completely abandoning music? And you're never going to do that. You know right. What I mean? Like I wrote a couple books. I really? Like writing. And
Oh, I saw that actually.
And it's just one of those things where it's like, I do like writing, but I got to a point where it was like, I don't have time to do the writing and be the musician and at the same time. Not well, anyway. I don't have a lot of time.
Well, that's for sure the thing. Like, between the furniture stuff and music stuff, it's like, I have these yes. two highly articulate skills, but I can't fucking seem to squeeze them both in because if I'm doing this, I'm not doing this. If I'm not doing this, I'm diminishing here. And if I'm diminishing there, what's the fucking point of doing it in the first place?
That's it. So you've got that. I totally forgot about the furniture because you're incredible at that. I've seen your tables.
Yeah, they're fun.
Yeah. What's it called? It's in the intro. I can't remember the name of the business.
Oh, Industrial Imperfections.
And can people still hire you out to do that stuff?
Yes. I'm definitely still doing that. But it's like, I was going to just do that this year. And then, you know, now I have this huge tour again. And it's like, when I leave my house for 2 months, really derails, you know, a home-based business. So, yeah, I am still doing that. It's just not sitting where it used to sit. It used to be the main thing. And now it's kind of a sideshow. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Very talented at that. So also with the remote recording, mm-hmm. You know, somebody could hire you out to come to Autobar and record the show, or this is...
Oh, no, it'll just be just for drums, okay. Just for okay. drum tracking. Yeah. I'm just trying to make it like an entirely home-based thing where I can get, you know, good results and professional results out of without having to go to fucking Nashville.
Yeah, man. Well, awesome. We've covered a lot of things.
Absolutely, we have.
We're about an hour and a half, probably hour 45 in. So I'm going to cut it now. Just for the listeners, what are we about to hear? The Candlebox song, it was elegant, right?
Elegante.
Elegante.
Which is elegant in Spanish.
Fair enough.
And that's its only connection to the song.
So we covered aliens, we yes. covered space, we covered Candlebox, we covered the last year. But the new record's great. If you haven't checked it out, check out Candlebox's new record, The Long Goodbye, on Spotify. BJ, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it.
Cool. Thanks, buddy.